Blog Talk Radio. Everyone, you are listening to Voices for Justice. I'm your host, Michelle Bart. February 24th, 2010. Domestic violence, it's not just a problem for adults. Teens experience intimate partner violence in their relationships too. In fact, intimate partner violence is very common in teen dating relationships and even teenage friendships. Our guest this evening will be taking your call shortly. The number is 347-838-8622. Again, the call-in number for questions, make sure you prompt, I believe it's number one, if you have a question for the host. The number is 347-838-8622. Tonight we have two women from Project Safe Girls. We're going to be speaking with Bethany Corbin and Annie Jacoby. They're going to be with us shortly. But love shouldn't hurt, and that's what we're going to talk about this evening. Love should not hurt. And tonight we dive into the teen dating violence as we observe National Teen Dating Violence Awareness and Prevention Month. And the statistics are startling. But first, let's welcome our guests. Bethany and Annie, are you with us?
Yeah, hi, Michelle. Thank you so much for having us.
Oh, you're welcome. Welcome. Did I hear Annie on too?
Yes, I'm here. Hi, how are you?
Well, welcome. Welcome. Welcome, ladies. Thank you for being with us. I know that February is, like I said, National Teen Dating Violence Awareness and Prevention Month. And I sure hope with all of the research I've done tonight that there's a lot of people doing some good work out there. And the two of you are a couple of those wonderful angels out there. You know, in March 2006, around that time, I believe it was Liz Claiborne's company that commissioned TRUE. For those listening, that means the Teenage Research Unlimited Group, to conduct a survey. And the statistics that they were able to come up with are so startling. And I want to go over that a little bit before we dive into some of the stuff that all of you do. One in three teenagers experience some kind of abuse, including verbal and emotional abuse. That is mind-boggling, one in three teenagers. Nearly, and this was the one statistic that really just amazed me, nearly 80% of the girls that were surveyed had been physically abused by a boyfriend. One in four girls who had been in a relationship revealed that she was pressured into performing oral sex or engage in intercourse under the age of 18. It's just mind-boggling. And one in four teens who have been in a serious relationship say their boyfriend or girlfriend had tried to prevent them from spending time with friends or family. So again, I go back to the same thing. It's not just a loving relationship, boyfriend-girlfriend. It's also friendships where the jealousy plays a factor. And you girls, Bethany, you started Project Safe Girls. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, Project Safe Girls is a new division of Annie's company, which is the Realistic Female Self-Defense Company. And we train girls ages 5 through 23, anyone who's in school, basically about safety awareness, safety prevention, and physical self-defense. So we do the mental component with the physical component, and that's what makes our program extremely unique. And Project Safe Girls actually stemmed out of an assault situation that I was personally involved in, where I was abused on the UNC campus in front of individuals who never offered to help me. So there was absolutely no bystander intervention, and nobody had ever taught me personally how to see the warning signs of abusive relationships, because it's not usually the case where abuse will just come out and you'll just get physically assaulted. Normally, there's warning signs that lead up to it. There's the emotional and the verbal abuse. And that happened in my relationship, and I was never taught those signs, so I could never really see them. Everybody else saw them except for me, and I feel like if I had been taught these kinds of things, that I could have escaped the situation before it turned physically violent.
How does the program differ from other self-defense programs? If both of you wanted to chime in on that. I know there's a lot of martial arts programs, especially designed for women and girls these days. What's different between what you do and they do?
Sure. Well, I actually personally have 10 years of Taekwondo experience. So I love the martial arts. I have a black belt in Taekwondo, but martial arts takes a lot of time to learn. It took me 10 years, and there's a lot of rules governing what you can do. For example, you can't hit below the belt, or you can't punch to the face, and Annie and I believe that that's not realistic at all. We personally think that it's more realistic to hit a man instead of hitting a pad, and that in real life there are no rules governing what you can and can't do. So Annie and I have this program that it doesn't take years to learn. It takes a couple hours, and you've got it for the rest of your life. And I know Annie can talk more about it.
Annie?
Thanks so much, Michelle, for having us. The system that we teach, it's called the SPEAR system, and it's we are certified instructors with BLAR Tactical Systems in out of Virginia Beach. And he has three divisions, and what we actually teach, and I've stopped sugarcoating it because it's not realistic to sugarcoat either. So basically it's hand-to-hand combat. It's the same system that our law enforcement is taught and also our military. The division that we're certified with as instructors is civilian. So basically what we do is we fine-tune what we do on a daily basis with what God has given us, and that's our mind, our bodies, and our spirits. And most importantly is that, you know, with our system, it's not gender specific. I mean, men are in the, you know, they learn the system as well as women. But most importantly, I was attracted to it because I was approached by a law enforcement officer a number of years ago and asked to market for him, and he showed me, and I went through two levels of training. But I saw a component where I saw where we weren't reaching the females where we really needed to do the first part, which is awareness and proactiveness and safety, and ultimately then teach females how to use their body to defend themselves, because I'm a firm believer that we have every right to protect and defend ourselves. So the system
basically... So do the laws support that?
Yes.
Sorry to interrupt you.
Yes.
So do the laws...
That's okay.
Do the laws support that theory then? Because a lot of the time you see on television that individuals that finally have had enough or stand up for their rights, or they're in a situation, especially, you know, not so much a teenager, but possibly, you know, a woman who's been verbally and mentally and physically abused for years, all of a sudden takes the law into her own hands inside her own home. She's arrested. What if I hurt somebody after you've taught me how to defend myself?
Well, basically, Michelle, you know, I mean, if you're in fear for your life, now, of course, you know, you have to understand how to de-escalate a situation verbally and non-verbally, and we teach that. Number one, we don't want any female to really have to use the physical part of our training. Hopefully all the awareness and the proactiveness and the safety tips that we teach is going to be able to put her in safe arms, but that doesn't guarantee anything. No, I mean, martial arts isn't a guarantee. There's no guarantees in life, but the fact is that, you know, if you're in fear for your life, if you have every right to protect and defend yourself. Now, does that mean just because somebody has had enough of being abused that they can just go and kill somebody? No, I mean, but if it's an altercation and you're in fear for your life, You know, I mean, you have to do what you have to do to protect yourself. You have every right to do that. And, you know, I mean, I think that, you know, anybody, we always tell everybody, you know, check with your local law enforcement. You know, I train with law enforcement officers in the different states. And, you know, I mean, you just have to use common sense, but most importantly, you have to protect yourself, and the first part is being able to escape. We don't want anybody to, you know, our system isn't where it's not boxing. It's you don't stand in there and you don't go 10 rounds with an individual, because, you know, women do not fight or defend themselves with muscle mass. I mean, men overpower us with muscle, and what we do is we teach our females how to use their knowledge and how men think. I mean, you know, people are like, how men think? It's like, yeah, how men really think. What do they think? What do they expect? So we teach the females in class basically those types of things. But ultimately, Michelle, I don't want my girls to have to use self-defense, the physical part. I want to be able to teach them, you know, proactively, what can I do and what are the warning signs? And, I mean, it's just like with teen dating violence. It's you know, there are warning signs. There's warning signs for the parents and there's warning signs for the kids. And both the parents and the kids have got to be educated about what they are. And a lot of people are, unfortunately. I mean, it's just very sad. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. There's a delay here, so I apologize. The warning signs, you know, a lot of people brush them off, I think, because growing up, you know, it was a lot different when I was a teenager than it is these days. I mean, I've seen my friends' daughters, you know, pinch each other and hit each other, and, oh, no, it's just friendly. But in reality, the types of abuse that folks could see as a sign, scratching and biting and kicking, your typical things that you might brush off as a friendly thing may not be that friendly. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the thing is, it's interesting that you said that, because I was doing a presentation demonstration a couple of years ago, and it was a law enforcement officer that had approached me about coming on board and being, you know, an instructor. And I'm very, very particular about my instructors, my male instructors, and as well as females, but I work only primarily with male instructors, because that's more realistic for a female to actually hit a man's body or defend herself than to hit, like Bethany said, pads or, you know, bags and things like that. So in the middle of my presentation demonstration, he put his girlfriend in a headlock and gave her what we call a noogie, where you rub your knuckles on somebody's head. Yeah. I was livid. I was livid, Michelle, and I went, you know, I got through the presentation and the demonstration, and he came up to me afterwards, and he thought it was awesome and everything, and I said to him, I said, thanks, but, you know, I really don't think that this is a good fit for you. I mean, right there, to me, that was an outward expression of, you know what, you don't have respect for women, number one, and, you know, you might think that this is joking, and you might think it's all fun and dandy, and if that's what you want to do at home, that's your business and her business, but when you're with me, that's not how we act. That's not respectful. And it's in, you know, my kids are even like that because I've got two boys. But the fact is that it's really important to understand what is healthy. And that's what Bethany and I talk about all the time, is what are healthy relationships? What's healthy actions between individuals? And no, pinching and grabbing somebody, or, you know, making fun of them or demeaning them verbally, or, you know, there's a whole bunch of, and we can go through those, but no, that's not healthy behavior. It's not for anybody. Even when kids are going at it with each other, is that healthy? I mean, it's like put them in a ring and let them go at each other. That's not what you do. It's not healthy behavior. So I'm a firm believer it starts at home, but, you know, there's a lot of things that are happening out there today that that parents aren't aware of. For many, many reasons, and we just want to educate, just like, you know, we do about everything else, and we feel that, you know, what we do should be part of curriculum. Absolutely, it's an educational thing, and it's personal, it's life skills, and we don't teach life skills.
It's insurance.
Unfortunately.
Is what
oh,
it is.
Thank you. Thank you. I love you.
It's insurance. You know, we have
yep.
no problem spending $89 as I do for my SUV every month. But if I had a child, there's many programs and services I would be buying into, such as yourself or the Take 25 program over at the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, because those are programs that you all are offering that basically is cheaper than a latte and cheaper than a car insurance payment, and yet it's ensuring that if anything should ever happen, the child is prepared. And, you know, it's just, it comes down to society and re-educating them. But before we go on, I wanted to make sure that our listeners have the hotline for if you feel that you're in danger, you know somebody that is in danger, you know a teenager that needs some help, please dial 866-331-9474. Again, that number is 866-331-9474. And you can also go to projectsafegirls.net or .com.
No, .com.
.com. And visit Bethany and Annie over there as well. But yeah, there's so many, you know, when you looked at the types of abuses, they stand out as like anything that we've been taught as adults. You know, the pulling hair, the punching, the slapping, the shoving, the pushing. You know, one doesn't think pushing is a form of abuse. Choking, as you were saying, the headlock, throwing stuff, weapon use, all of these. If children or teenagers are utilizing this type of behavior with friends or boyfriend, girlfriends, these are things that parents need to look out for and say, what are you doing? You know, and not take the thing that the teenager, oh, it's just a friendly pat. Nothing is a friendly pat in the 21st century. How did the two of you decide to partner up? Anyone?
Bethany?
Go
ahead.
Whenever I decided that I wanted to start Project Safe Girls, I began looking through the Chapel Hill community for an organization that already had an established curriculum and had credentials, because essentially I am only a college student. I haven't been out in the field as long as Annie has, so I don't possess all the knowledge that Annie or another individual may have. And when I came across Annie's organization, I looked at its website and all of the resources that it had available to it, and I saw that Annie's curriculum was basically the same thing that I wanted to teach females. It had the mental component with the physical component. It had it already structured into a curriculum. And so I contacted Annie, and we essentially just went from there. We realized that our goals were the exact same and that we could really work elbow to elbow on this initiative.
What made you all decide on the age limit of like 5 to 23?
Well, since violence is starting at younger ages now, I know in Chapel Hill, at least 21%, well, in North Carolina in general, at least 21% of the rapes that occurred were between the ages of 11 and 15. And so females are entering relationships at younger ages. Usually they'll start entering them in middle school now. And we believe that if you know beforehand what the characteristics of abusive relationships are and what a healthy relationship looks like, then you'll have a better chance of recognizing the warning signs sooner in relationships, which may alter your choice of relationships in the future, so you may not end up marrying an abusive person that you met in middle school or high school. You may be able to realize that it's an unhealthy situation for you. And so we believe that the earlier we can educate individuals, the better it would be for everyone.
You mentioned rape. Now, is it considered rape if a teenager rapes a teenager under the age of 18, or is it considered something differently these days?
You know, basically, you have to look at each state individually, Michelle, because it drives me crazy, to be honest with you, because I think, you know, rape is rape. I mean, that's the bottom line. But, you know, most states have three different types of rape, and what, you know, we have first degree, second degree, third degree. I don't know. I don't get it, that part. I don't understand why we can't just have one national law that says rape is rape and it doesn't matter if it was, you know, what degree. I mean, I just, that's my heart saying, I mean, rape is rape. No is no. No means no. But, you know, every state is different with what they define as rape and what degree of rape. But pretty much, you know, and that's really always left up to, you know, law enforcement and, you know, the test kits and what goes on. But, you know, I mean, Bethany can tell you a little bit about this because she made me aware of it, was that, you know, Bethany, tell her about the article that was just published about universities and colleges as far as I call it a cover-up, basically.
No.
You mean the one regarding the anti, the consent campaign, essentially? Well, UNC...
Yeah, okay.
Well, UNC has started a consent campaign, and what it basically is, it's trying to put a positive spin on consent, and so instead of using the traditional no means no, we have signs that say only yes means yes, things like that. So they try and increase communication, and they promote better communications and relationships, saying that communication will lead to better sex. So there was an article written about it in our Daily Tar Heel, and the article was a very straightforward article, basically said, kind of outlined what the campaign was, why the student government and the university felt that it was imperative to do this. And when you go online and you look at the online comments that readers have made about this article, it's mind-boggling. I mean, the comments that were made about this article outraged me to the point where one person was saying that, you know, if that rap music and promiscuity was being promoted by campus health, and that if women didn't want to be raped, then they shouldn't dress the way that they dress, and things like that. And so it just reinforces within me the fact that people have absolutely no idea what these topics really are about. People are not educated about domestic violence at all, which leads there to be this huge confusion about what is consent. And so I know UNC is trying to kind of establish that, but the online comments are ridiculous. Whenever you go and read them, it's really sad.
I would think that consent would obviously be where there's no resistance on either
exactly.
person's part. When there is one stitch of resistance, then it's her word against mine, you know, and that's where, you know, when I say no and he said, well, she meant yes, you know, there was no resistance, you know, there's a fine line, but you mentioned each state is different. And the more I listen to this, I'm the chairperson for Seroptimus's Northwest Coalition Against Trafficking. We are doing a lot on human trafficking in the Pacific Northwest. And I'll tell you what I'm seeing across the board with domestic violence, human trafficking, and any other type of violence, whether it's bullying or what have you, which actually falls under domestic violence these days, that it should be a federal law. You know, there
mm-hmm.
shouldn't be each state is different. You know, there was one common factor with driving in this country that the states don't have regulation. We all drive on the right side of the road. You know, but otherwise,
right.
every state has different frickin' rules. And it's like,
well,
when you're coming down to human life, it should be a federal law. And anybody that rapes or like that doctor, you know, that's from Delaware or wherever,
Lord,
you know,
yes.
106 children, you know, mm-hmm. there should not be no questions asked. And he should be going straight to federal courts and not pass go, you know, and all domestic violence and all rapes and child molesters and kidnappings, they all should be federal-based and not state-based in my estimate. But now I've gotten personal, so I apologize. But
no, that's
but
okay.
You brought that
you're killing
up.
Us. Michelle, don't apologize, because more people need to hear what we're saying. And it's you know, I said to Bethany, I said, you know, when we're talking about kids, I mean, you know, especially girls who are before college, but even college girls are oblivious, but we really need to reach the parents. And that's where I said to her, I said, you know, that's why it's so important for us to get into the PTAs and to the church groups and the women's groups and really, really hone in on the moms and say, look, you know what, you know, you need to know this stuff because this is your daughter's life we're talking about. And, I mean, and when we talk about statistics, those are only numbers being reported. So many assaults of, you know, rape and violence and abuse, I mean, there's so much going on that isn't even reported, and it's so sad.
And right in
these
a school.
Girls, oh, absolutely. And these girls, they don't know it. They don't know, you know, what their options are. They don't know, I mean, you know, I was dating him, but, you know, I mean, you know, he coerced me or something. Is that right? They don't know what the definition is. They don't know, you know, I mean, most people think that rape is, you know, rape is only defined as a brutal act, you know, or a weapon or something. And that's not the case.
If
you do not consent, you know, then it's very, very critical. I mean, when you're talking to, you know, law enforcement and things like that, but if you do not consent to sexual intercourse or, you know, acts of sex, as far as the victim is concerned, or the female, or I mean, males can be victims as well. But if consent, you know, has to be, I mean, it has to be expressed that it's okay, you know. But if they don't consent to it and it's duress, then, you know, I mean, it's rape. If you're coerced into doing something just because, you know, and this is verbal coercion that they're using right now. Is that, you know, it's all kind of like a bartering system. Well, if you do this for me, I'll do that for you. You know, I mean, it's like, or, you know, I mean, it's demeaning, and our young people don't even understand it. They don't even get it. They don't even know that sexting on the telephone, their cell phones, is illegal. This is what's blowing my mind as a woman and an adult and been in the field so long. They don't even know that sexting is illegal. They don't even know that stalking, they don't even know what stalking is half the time, but they don't even know that stalking is a crime.
I don't understand
that's why
how kids today think sending a photo of themselves or a naked photo for that matter.
Michelle, it's really...
Go ahead.
I have to tell you this incident. Yesterday I was with an insurance person. And, you know, she was disclosing to me some things, and it was basically a young man had a cell phone, and, you know, his mom got a hold of the cell phone and started looking at the pictures, and there were pictures of naked girls. And these girls were like, you know, I think he was like 16 or 17, and these girls were like, you know, 13 and 14. And then explicitly in text messaging, telling him what they were going to do to him and what he was going to do to them. And I looked at her and I said, and what did she do? And she said, she just said that he couldn't have his phone. I said, well, I'm sorry, but you know what? That phone needs to go to the police department. Immediately take that phone, tell her to take that phone to the police department, and charges need to be filed against those girls, and he needs to be made aware of it. I mean, it's got to stop. And, you know, it's just, it's not funny. It's just not funny. And these kids today are doing things that, you know, you and I probably didn't even think about in college. But, you know, I mean,
college, even high school.
It just blows my mind.
You know, it just blows my mind. I mean, it's I'm lost for words. I have a niece who's 3 and another one that's 1.5. And I really feel sorry for them in this world right now. It's a tough time to grow up.
Well, and you know what? Kids don't come with manuals, unfortunately.
No.
You know, nobody told us, like, you know, it's like, you know, the stages of their life. And you know, Bethany's, you know, she's old enough to be my daughter, but the fact is that, you know what? They don't come with manuals. And I tell parents all the time, Michelle, is that, you know what, if I don't care if your kid gets upset with you because you check the phone. I don't care if that kid gets upset with you because you check you know, emails, or you check the computer, and I don't want to hear about, like, you know, get out of my business. Well, you know what? As long as you're in my house and you're my responsibility, and until you're 18 and you're out on your own, I am responsible for you. And that's one thing parents don't understand, and they don't get it. And I'm trying so hard to get it across to them, because the bottom line is that ultimately, legally, you are responsible for your child.
Every
God
step
forbid
of the way.
Something happens, every step. God, I mean, you know, I mean, look at driving. You have, I mean, you know, it's a permit. You know, you, I mean, there's a whole bunch of those. That person, that child's life is in your hands. And ultimately, you are responsible to protect and defend that child and do everything to nurture that child to the best of your ability, but get in her or his business. It's your job. And I keep telling parents, get your heads out of the sand. And this naive thing, I'm a real I talk because it's like, you know, get your heads out of the sand, wake up and smell the coffee. You'll spend $200 for a pair of damn jeans that they won't wear in 6 months. But yet, you won't even spend that kind of money to give her life extension insurance?
Or so, you won't even spend 2 minutes sitting down and showing them photos of what could happen if they don't stand up for themselves. Or
absolutely.
What could happen if you think everybody, you can trust everybody out there. If you're listening this evening, we are talking about teenage violence, in particular teen dating violence, which February is National Teen Dating Violence Awareness and Prevention. And ironically, in society today, you were speaking about the schools, Annie, and, you know, I go back to the 80s when AIDS came to be. Actually, everyone
yes.
thought it was the C word. They all thought it was cancer. And
mm-hmm.
it's now known as HIV and AIDS. It went away in the 90s. Why? Because there was so much awareness about that particular disease, and everyone was okay with having condoms on campus and all of this. And now where are we in the 21st century? The incline of AIDS is doubling to where it used to be. And why? Because we stopped talking about it. If we did the
absolutely.
Same with breast cancer and everybody didn't have the self-breast exam charts and education, that would be on an incline as well. And so why should our children be any different?
Absolutely.
If we could get condoms in the schools years ago, there should be no reason why we can't put them there now. And it's not because of just sexual transmitted diseases. It's to protect them. And if you are dating somebody where somebody is refusing to wear one and forcing you to still have sex with them, whether it's oral or not, it's still forced upon, and you need to call the hotline. Again, the hotline number is 866-331-9474. And getting into the PTAs and all, why is it that there's groups like yourself and Soroptimus and many other groups across the country, there's more nonprofits than people, why is it that we can't why won't they allow us in to help prevent things? They put up such a wall when people want to help prevent things, and then when something drastic happens, whether a teenager has been abused, raped, kidnapped, trafficked, then we don't have the money to find them. So then we're in a vicious cycle, and I just don't get it. And teen violence hasn't been really in the media spotlight until after Rihanna happened last year. And why does it have to take a Rihanna to make us talk about it?
And that's what, you know, it's interesting, Michelle, because, I mean, I blasted it last year when that happened because, you know, I mean, domestic violence, assault, abuse, I mean, rapes, date rapes, stalking, all these things are, it's an epidemic. We have an epidemic on our hands, And it's just like you were talking about, you know, getting sex education into the schools. Well, that was fought and fought and fought, but finally got in there. Because the fact is that, you know, back then, we didn't condone, we didn't condemn, we just put on the blind, not we, not I'm not saying, I'm not me, but people did, is that you just prayed to God, nobody got pregnant. You didn't ask any questions, nobody asked any questions. I know that was, I mean, like when I was growing up, nobody asked any questions. But you just put the blinders on and just pray that nobody was getting pregnant. And then when the HIV and AIDS came out, it was like, and that came to fruition, it was like, oh, hell yeah, you better talk to your daughter and your son. Because people are dying from this. Well, now we've got situations where we've got abuse going on. We've got it going on. Well, we know we have it in the homes. And we see a pattern. And it's got to stop. The violence has got to stop in the homes, too. So we've got to educate the parents. But most importantly, the thing is that why can't we, it's a taboo, why is it a taboo subject? Why is it taboo to talk and educate a young lady or even a five-year-old, for God's sakes, about, you know, getting down to their level? Of course, we customize our training to according to ages, but a five-year-old, teaching a five-year-old how to draw attention to herself instead of screaming, you know, because, I mean, kids are always like, you know, mommy, I don't want to go with you, or daddy, I don't want to go with you. But, you know, teaching them how to draw attention to themselves, how to crawl up a man's body and go to work at his head and really fight. Teach them, you know, I don't like the word stranger danger because it's no longer a stranger assaulting our young girls. But, you know, the family password, just all these little things that we can be teaching our young people, and we're not doing it. Because it's a taboo subject. Nobody wants to discuss it. Nobody wants to put it out there. You know, if you talk about rape, you talk about domestic violence or, you know, assault or anything, you know, you're condoning. I'm not condoning. I'm educating. That's what it's all about. And if you're not, if you, you know, as a parent, if you don't feel comfortable educating your child, then we will. We're very comfortable with it. So, you know, like we have, it's really interesting. And with PTAs, you know, I go and I speak to PTA groups, and we even do fundraisers with PTAs, where a portion of the proceeds goes back into the funding. And some of these PTAs are, you know, well, you know, we can't really turn anybody away. You know, what are we going to do about funding? Well, we help you with that. We reach out to the communities. We reach out to the corporations and the companies and the individuals, and we ask them to sponsor a young lady and help us give her free training. Of course, there's criteria they should meet as far as, you know, financially. But if we have a situation where we have a young lady that just can't do it, I have trained for nothing because that's how important it is to me. Now, I can't keep doing it, but the fact is that it's my heart. But that's why we work with all these
people. So your initial funding for Project Safe Girls come from the community, though, correct?
Well, Bethany, why don't you talk on that as far as how you got your funding to start the Project Safe Girls Hunting?
Sure. Well, Project Safe Girls has been initially funded by two grants from UNC, and the first grant is the Seagraves grant, and that's through the Center for Public Service, and that one's for $300. And then the second grant is the Apple Social Entrepreneur Fellowship, and that is $1,500. And these have kind of allowed us to cover costs for publicity and advertising and things like that. So these are covering some of our startup costs, but in the future we will need more money to be able to offer these quote-unquote free trainings or reduced-cost trainings. And for that, we're planning on looking for fundraising and corporate sponsorships because we believe that'll be the good way to go, and we'll also be applying for more grants. But to answer your question, yes, we are funded by the University of North Carolina currently through two grants.
So are you under their umbrella as a 501? Actually, they wouldn't be a 501c3, their education, but
right.
Are you a 501c3, or do you have any plan to be?
No, I explained to Bethany, because with the Realistic Female Self-Defense Company, I spoke to a founder of one of the domestic violence agencies and also a lawyer. And I asked her, you know, should I start a 501c3? And she said no. She said because funding is so tight right now, federally, statewide, and county, that the established agencies, you know, they'll fight you all the way because they don't want their funding taken away. the best thing to do is partner up with them, because every agency has an educational outreach department.
That is true.
And so what we're trying to do, they've got the funding to do the educational outreach. We're trying to go elbow to elbow with them. Now Bethany's funding that she was able to get through UNC to start up the Y program, yes, that's through the UNC's nonprofit. But as far as an organization, the only person that gets paid out of that funding that she initially got will be the lead male instructor of the physical defense. But all my time, all of Bethany's time, it's all volunteer for that specific project.
With the Realistic Female Self-Defense Company, that's yours, though, correct?
Well, they're both mine. Project Safe Girls is a division of ours, but we are not a 501c3 on either one or the company overall.
But you are a for-profit company that can.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does that part of it, the Realistic Female Self-Defense Company, does that have an age-specific category, or can you go out and train corporations?
We can go out and train corporations. What I've told Bethany is with Project Safe Girls, before we had Project Safe Girls, the Realistic Female Self-Defense Company, you know, trained from 5 to 65, seniors, disabled, you know, anybody, any females. But when we brought on Project Safe Girls, we wanted to just hone in on school age girls who are in school. Now, if we have, a young lady that's, say 20 years old and she's not in school, then she would be trained with the Realistic Female Self-Defense Company. And it's just, that's just a division that we put out there because it was important, because we want to really reach out with Project Safe Girls to the girls who are school age. And then we have, and then of course, you know, in Project Safe Girls, you know, we from 12 years old and under, we always ask that, you know, a female parent or guardian be present at training, of course, because they have to know what they're doing and they have to practice. I mean, it's not like they learn and they go away. They have to practice every day what they do, and it's mental blueprints they develop. But the Realistic Female Self-Defense Company, you know, we train from, you know, if they're out of school, then that company trains. And if we have mothers and daughters that want to train together, then we usually put them in the Realistic Female Self-Defense Company together.
Where are you folks located?
We're in the Triangle. We're based in the Triangle in North Carolina. Well, we travel throughout the United States training and speaking and doing presentations and demos.
Have you ever considered partnering? Oh, go ahead.
What I was going to say is wherever there's females, we need to be. I mean, you know, that's hospitals, law offices. You know, we go and we speak and we do presentations and we do demos and we train and we do it all. But, you know, it's kind of like you have to go and put your thinking cap on and say, well, geez, if there's females at a hospital, bingo. Colleges, universities, high schools, middle schools, Girl Scout groups, 4-H? You know, wherever there's females, I mean, there's
well,
unlimited.
That would be Soroptimus.
Sororities, you know, I mean.
Soroptimus,
I mean,
we're in about 120 countries, and
exactly.
There's about close to 90,000 of us, so.
So there's a lot to go around.
The reason I ask is because, many police departments now across the country do what they call citizens academies. And each week for 12 weeks, they do something different, whether it's the evidence room to the ride-along, et cetera. What if a program like yours were to partner up with law enforcement and one particular training actually was the training that you offered and they get certified in whatever you're teaching them at that time?
Well, you know, it's interesting because there's a lot of there are law enforcement officers that do train and teach civilians, but then I've also come across where there's many law enforcement departments that frown upon their officers doing anything like we do outside of the job because of workman's comp. And if they're hurt and they're injured, then they're taken off of, you know, they can't work, they can't be on the force. They have to, you know,
right,
sit out. So, what we do is we connect with the, you know, wherever we go, we always make a connection with the media, and we also make a connection with the law enforcement because we want them to come in because that's their community. And we want them, you know, the chief or the investigators or, you know, the female detectives that help with the rape victims. We want them to come in and speak to the group as well because that's their community. They've got the stats. They know what's going on in the area, and they don't hush it. And that's one thing that we always try to meet up with the sheriff's departments and the law enforcement ahead of time before going into the cities or the towns, and ask them to join us and come in and speak to the group as well. To let them know that it's here.
I met a fantastic young lady, 17 years old, recently. Her mother's a soroptimist, and she made a film when she was 15 called Just Yell Fire. Have either of you seen that? I encourage you to check out her website at justyellfire.org. She was 15 when she made the film, and it's similar to what you all are doing out here on the West Coast. But it's a breath of fresh air to see a 17-year-old that's able to try to have a voice, if you will, pardon the pun, but voice for justice, like the two of you are, and finding ways of making sure that everybody around knows about you guys, you know, because it is important to be safe. I'd rather be safe than sorry. And what's a typical training to pass your class or get certified? How many weeks or days?
Well, when we do local training, you know, right, like within a 50-mile radius of the triangle, it's usually 4 hours. But sometimes we go, we go the whole six. It depends on how many we have in the group, really. But when we travel, we usually ask, you know, if we can have, you know, if we can get 20 females in a group, and we do a 6-hour training. And it's amazing to me because I've been doing this for a number of years, but it's amazing to me how much is absorbed, because the thing is that the physical part, I break it down, Michelle, very easily, and I've been taught this as well as being an instructor, is that it's not complicated. It's just, you know, like, what are the strong points in your body? How can you de-escalate a situation, which I talked about before? I always tell my male instructors, you got to keep it simple, stupid, because women don't need all this, like, hubbub that we learn to be certified instructors. But it's like, you know, how to use your elbow properly, how to do a correct palm strike. How to, I mean, and the first thing girls are taught, you know as well as I do, is how to, you know, knee them in the groin. Well, that's the first place they expect you to do. So we teach a lot of different things that they don't expect us to come out and do. And, but the thing is that I was going to ask you about Just Yell Fire. Is that where, I mean, are those the words that they're taught?
They're taught to yell fire, and it's an educational component similar to yours that, you know, you have 3 minutes to break free or you may never be seen again. And so,
well, see, it's interesting.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, because I was going to ask you about that, because I don't promote, say, yell fire, because we have seen where when you say, well, yell fire is better than help, or anything like that, because, I mean, draw attention to yourself. So I was going to ask you about that, because if you yell fire, you'll get more attention than you will by saying, help me. And that's why we say verbalize, yell, scream, do whatever. And as long as you're screaming, you're breathing, which means you're not going to go unconscious, because I don't teach unconscious self-defense. So, you know, as long as you're yelling and you're screaming and you're doing that, you're breathing, you're okay. And that's why I wanted to ask you about that, because it's really important for them to understand how the whole mechanism goes into place. But our training is usually 6 hours from start to finish, and that's with the awareness and teaching them the physical part. And at the end of our training, I've timed it. We do scenarios. I used to call it the death match, but my son made me, who's my lead instructor, made me change it up to, he said, you got to change up the words, Mom. That's nasty.
Yeah.
I call it the final drill. But, you know, I mean, in my brain, it was death match was fine with me because it was like, you know, who's going home, me or him?
Right.
And the mentality has got to be you're going home, and you've got to believe in yourself that you're going to go home. And you've got to know your exits at all times. And if he's in the way, you've got to get to the other side of him. You've got to do everything in your power. And you've got to, it's better to do something than nothing. Fight,
exactly.
fight. I don't care what anybody says, because it used to be when I was younger, you know, you don't fight back. And that's bull.
If you don't fight back, the chances are... Every situation is going to be different. I mean, obviously,
sure.
When we look at the J.C. Dugard case, she was only 11 years old when she was abducted. 18 years later, everyone questions, well, why didn't she try to break free? Well, by then, you know, you've gotten an 11-year-old. Now you've got a 29-year-old that is completely brainwashed. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they stay, you know, like Elizabeth Smart. And,
right.
you know, but if they were able to have broken free before leaving, then maybe that would have never happened. But you can't go back, you know.
No, you can't. And the thing is, Michelle, is that we really, really, people freeze, and we don't want you to freeze. We don't want you to be paranoid, because you can't go around life being paranoid. We just want you to be smart. We want you
right.
to be aware of your surroundings. Follow that intuition, those gut feelings, those butterflies that women get. And men don't, I mean, men are wired differently. But women have a thing called intuition. It's your best friend. If it doesn't feel right, then don't do it. Don't go there. If you, you know, you have to use your head. You have to be smart about it and not oblivious. And the thing
you've
is,
gotta
is that,
know
you know,
that the world is not a safe place. And,
exactly.
you know, and places like McCleary, Washington, where Lindsey Baum has gone missing, or in Utah, like Elizabeth Smart had, and that small town that J.C. had. These are little girls that are being taken out of their comfort zone, where nothing ever goes wrong. So...
Right.
Make sure your children are not scared to go to sleep, but let them know that, you know, my 3-year-old niece, since she was 2, when I was working on the Kaylee Anthony case, she knew, hold my hand at all times. And why do you hold my hand at all times? Because someone might take me. She's
right.
2, and people say, don't you think she's a little, my sister, don't you think she's a little too young? You're never too young. You are never too young to know what will happen if you don't listen to your, in my case, elders, but parents. Like you said,
cool.
You're my child. When you turn 18, you can go. I'll still worry, but you're on your own. But until then, you do what it takes to keep them safe. And letting them know that the world's not a safe place is part of keeping them safe.
Exactly.
And not pretending
exactly.
and putting the blinders on. We only have a few minutes left, and I wanted to make sure that we got some websites out there. If you go to projectsafegirls.com, correct?
Yes.
For some reason, I want to keep saying .net. Projectsafegirls.com, and they're also on our website as well at blogtalkradio.com/helpingheroes. But again, if you know anyone that's going through something, teenage, young adult, child, and they need help, please call the hotline. The national hotline is 866-331-9000.
9474. And a couple websites that we utilize at Seroptimus a lot. You can try loveisrespect.org. You can also go to seroptimus.org. We have a whole section on teenage violence as well. The safespace.org is great. Mariska Hardate from Law & Order, she's the founder of the Joyful Heart Foundation .org as well. You can visit them. And many of these organizations are also up for the Pepsi grant, and I encourage you to get to know their programs. That's why I asked a few girls for a nonprofit, because I'm like, okay, let's get all these great nonprofits that help keep these girls and women safe. But you can also go to the YWCA.org, find a location near you. They have shelters. They will help you if you're in danger. And, of course, our human trafficking website is www.nwcat.org. You ask, why am I saying human trafficking? Because there is a common denominator amongst a lot of things, whether you're kidnapped, abducted — abduction is anything over 18 whether you're all of a sudden dating someone and you're a teenager and somebody's profiting off of you having sex with someone else. That's called trafficking, and it happens in our backyard. So there's a huge common denominator between all of this, and we encourage you to get to know all of these organizations. There is also a hotline on human trafficking. That is at the Polaris Project, 888-373-7888. A few minutes left, ladies. Tell, you know, in the Blog Talk Radio world, where we get most of our traffic, they download this and utilize it. They podcast it. They use it. Some people have used it for trainings, et cetera. What is the most important thing that the audience needs to know, and how Project Safe Girls can help them?
Bethany? I think that, Bethany, what from your standpoint, what do you feel?
I think the most important thing that parents can do is to get their children educated. You know, you see the statistics, you see what's happening in the world. The best thing that you can give your child, in addition to our education, is life skills, as Andy was saying, and that's one of the most important things that we need to do. But also as parents, another important thing I would say to do is to listen to your child when she comes to you if she's got an issue. My parents helped me get through my assault situation, and without them, I don't know what I would have done. They were very supportive. They were always there for me. My dad drove 2.5 hours to make sure I could go to my finals safely. So as parents, I would say be supportive, listen to your children, believe them, don't judge them. And then for females, you should also want to take a huge interest in your life. You should want to defend yourself, to know how to. So I would say to anyone out there, get involved, see what resources exist, and if you'd like a Project Safe Girls training, we'd be more than happy to come to your state.
Wonderful. And we might take you up on that over here in the Portland, Oregon area. Any last thoughts, Annie?
My last thought is that, you know, I think that, you know, parents, just step up to the plate. It's time. It's your responsibility. You know, we have a blog on WordPress that you can look at, and it has a lot of information for parents and for kids. But know the warning signs that you can watch out for your teens. You know, there's sudden loss of interest in activities, low grades, loss of appetite, changes in sleep patterns, just different things, wearing long sleeve and long pants and scarves to cover things up. You know, if you suspect that your teen is in an abusive relationship, encourage them to talk and get yourself educated as well about things that could be going on. It's our job. And I say this to mom and dads all over the place, you know, step up to the plate, and it's okay. Get in their business.
Definitely, definitely. Well, thank you, ladies, for joining us this evening. Join us this Sunday for a special on the Casey Anthony case. Is it fact or fiction? You be the judge. Until we meet again, be true to yourself and be safe and not sorry. Thank you again, ladies. And
thank you, Michelle.
Everyone have a great, safe night. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Has been gone 3 months to the day. Welfare has become her way of life. Her only dream was to be the perfect wife. Why? Why this even happened? Why? To be anyone we know. Don't ever turn your back to the people who reach out. They call it downsize and make a room for the new. He's in his 50s, now what's he gonna do? Why? Why this even happen? Why? Could be an